ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
टेक्स्ट,
व्हिच टेक्स्ट? 15। We're reading from the 7th canto, 12th chapter, The Perfect Society, Four Spiritual Classes. Text 15. Agno gure vatman atmani cha sarva bhuteshu adhokshajam bhutai svadamabhi pashyad aprarvishtam parvishtavat agno gurayav atmani cha sarva bhuteshu adhokshajam bhutai svadamabhi pasyad aparvishtam parvishtavat agno gurayav atmani cha sarva bhuteshu adhokshajam bhutai svadamabhi pashyad aparvishtam parvishtavat. Arno atmani cha sarva bhuteshu adhokshajam Mataji, okay. Agno, in the fire. Guru, in the spiritual master. Atmani, in oneself. Cha, also. Sarva bhuteshu, in every living entity. Ahokshajam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who cannot be seen or perceived with the material eyes or other material senses. Bhutai, with all living entities. Svadamabhi, along with his lordship's paraphernalia. Pashyat, one should see. Apravishtam, not entered. Pravishtavat, also entered. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. One should realize that in the fire, in the spiritual master, in oneself, and in all living entities, in all circumstances and conditions, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, has simultaneously entered and not entered. He is situated externally and internally as the full controller of everything. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's omnipresence is the perfect realization of the Absolute Truth to be obtained through the study of the Vedic literatures. As stated in the Brahma Samhita 5:35, Andhatarasta Paramanu Charitarastam. The Lord is situated within the universe, within the heart of every living entity, and also within the atom. We should understand that whenever the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present, He's present with all His paraphernalia, including His name, form, associates, and servants. The living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus, one should understand that since the Supreme Lord has entered the atom, the living entities are also there. One must accept the inconceivable quality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For no one can understand from the material point of view how the Lord is all-pervasive and yet is situated in His own abode, Goloka Vrindavan. This realization is possible if one strictly follows the regulative principles of ashram, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Srila Madhvacharya says in this regard, apravishta savargatai, pravishta tviv anurpavan, evam tvi rapo bhagavan, harirepo janardanaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in His original form, has not entered everything, apravishtaha, but in His impersonal form, He has entered, pravishtaha. Thus, He's entered and not entered simultaneously. This is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita 9:4, wherein the Lord says, Mayatidam idam sarvam jagat avakya murtina matstani sarva bhutini nachayam te avishtaha. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. The Lord can defy Himself. Thus, there is variety in unity. Ekatvam bahutvam. Thus there is variety in unity. Translation: one should realize that in the fire, in the spiritual master, in oneself, and in all living entities, in all circumstances and conditions, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu has simultaneously entered and not entered. He is situated externally and internally as the full controller of everything. Om Agyanatam Randasya Ganagana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jainatasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Offer my humble obeisances to the lotus feet of my spiritual master who has opened my eyes blinded by the darkness of ignorance with the torchlight of knowledge. Okay, this was not the verse I prepared for, but that's okay. Reminds me of a story one devotee told me. He was an Indian devotee here in Mumbai in 1976. And he was studying at the IT Academy across Mumbai. He did not have any awareness of the ISKCON presence at that time. in Mumbai. And he had been searching for the meaning of life in many books in a library there. True story. And he realized that nobody had the answer. And that life was meaningless and empty. So he decided to commit suicide. There, Prabhupada describes suicide as when the modes of nature are so heavy that the soul cannot resist this heinous act. It's actually a very sinful act. So he decided that since he'd been studying at the library so deeply these subjects, that he was going to go to the library and pick out a very fanciful book, enjoy reading the book, and the next day he would die. So he went to the library, and on the shelves he saw a cover of a book that looked kind of fun. It had these different lotuses on it with, you know, Brahma, and each lotus was a universe with Brahma coming from the Garbhodakshay Vishnu. He didn't really realize what it was at the time. It just looked almost like comics, you know. And it was actually not at that time there was only the editions from the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust in Los Angeles, the English edition of the Srimad Bhagavatam first canto. So looking at the cover, he just pulled it off the shelf and started reading. And the first thing that he read in that book, he just opened it up to a page, was God is a person. And he said that he'd never read that in any other book, that God was a person. So he started reading the whole book. And he became so enlivened by this book, shows you the power of our Prabhupada's books, that he ended up, of course, not committing suicide, and he ended up engaging some of his other IT students in the process of Krishna consciousness without any temple affiliation or anything, just practice what he had learned in the book. And for 1 year, he was studying like that. God is a person. And about a year later, in the newspaper, there was a picture of Srila Prabhupada, and there was a caption stating that he had passed away. And there was going to be a service at this temple. So he had no idea that there was a temple. Now he understood, oh my gosh, other people, they are also understanding this. So he went across town, he got to the temple kind of late, and he was sitting crying because he felt he had missed his opportunity to meet this great spiritual teacher. And he was praying. It was about 8 o'clock at night. He said, I don't want to leave this temple. I hope I can stay at this temple. And as he was praying, some devotee came up, tapped him on the shoulder. Would you like to stay the night? So he eventually became initiated, a disciple. And it was all because of this one principle that I think for myself was also the case. That actually, Prabhupada gave us this understanding of a chintya beda beda tattva. That, you know, Krishna is inconceivably one. He is everything. He's pervading everything in that impersonal energy of his. But he's also incomprehensibly separate from this. And this teaching is unique, but it's not just unique to Vaishnavism, it's very unique to Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Because we're not speaking simply of the manifestation of Krishna's energy throughout the universe coming from Vishnu, but we're actually speaking to the issue of who is the actual progenitor of Vishnu. Who is the principal Adi Purusha, the original person? That's the unique flavor of the Gaudiya Vaishnav sect. and of what we have to offer, and why people who understand that point are uniquely special. They've been given some very special kripa. It's not, many people come and they read Prabhupada's books, or they come and speak to devotees, or they come before these deities. For years they can come and they can stand, and they don't get that mercy of understanding this Ahokshajam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because they can't see beyond just how he pervades everything. They can't see that there's a source behind a painting, or behind a sculptor, or behind anything in life, a skyscraper, there's an architect. Behind everything in life, there's always a person. That way, many of us in the West began to understand demigods. I mean, we were brought up in a culture that eschewed the idea that there could be any worship of a statue. That this was somehow or another, even the Abrahamic tradition of Moses coming, you know, and speaking to the Jewish people after coming down from the mountain, oh, you are worshiping graven images of God. You have to give this up. And so the idea of deity worship, or many deities, is completely foreign to the Western mindset because of the Judeo-Christian teachings. Although they break those traditions themselves without admitting it, because they have these nice sculptures of Christ, and they, you know, bow to him and everything. You know, it's kind of like the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. And similarly, in India, you have Jai Shishi Ram Lakshman Sita Shishi Radharaspi Hari Vishaka Lalitiki Shishi Gorni Daiki. You have this inconceivable kind of misunderstanding that although they believe in many demigods, they don't believe that there's a person who's created all these demigods. And this is the battle, this is the war that we wage against the Maya. It's this idea that this oneness is the ultimate answer. So this verse is in this chapter, which is discussing the perfect society, the four spiritual classes. And in many ways, although I haven't listened to the other lectures that have been given on this subject, it's always been the elephant in the room. You know what is this phrase, the elephant in the room? You know, nobody notices, but actually there's a big elephant in the room. And that is the question, how do we, as devotees, relate to and actually begin to subscribe to the four varnas as a perfect social order? And this question has, because Prabhupada gave so much emphasis to it. In fact, he said 50% of his mission was to establish the varna and ashram. And yet, you know, here it is 50 years later, and we barely understand what that means. And we're certainly not very adept at doing it, because it's a very complex situation, since to establish a Brahminical society, which is what Prabhupada wanted to do, requires really educating people who are going to be the heads of that society. So in that respect, I did a little research on the issue within ISKCON of how do you take that idea of establishing Varnashram and deal with it practically. And Rabindra Sarup wrote a very interesting paper on the subject. So I thought I'd just give a little bit of his perspective, because it's much more Brahminical than mine. And I thought I would share with you, because you're studying this, although this particular verse to some degree departs from the question of Varnashram, it's within the entire chapter of Varnashrama, and there's some very specific recommendations given that we don't follow. So how is it that we've got this Shastra and we can't follow it? I was discussing a little earlier, it's like trying to understand the mind of a pure devotee. What to speak of, you can't understand Krishna, we just have to accept Krishna as he is. And Prabhupada also, for example, he said, 50% of my mission is establishing Varnashram. And at other times he said, 50% of my mission is refuting the scientists. So that's 100%. What about the rest of everything we do? So how we can understand, that's 100%, and yet we have so many other preaching tasks to perform. And not only that, but we have to purify ourselves from within and in our own sadhana. So the mind of a pure devotee is not to be understood by simple logic, but it is vigyan, it is realized. And realization is due to kripa, is due to mercy, and sukriti. And sukriti and kripa come from what? Vaidhi bhakti, from sadhana. We as Vaidhi bhaktis have to become, to come from the stage of Vaidhi bhakti, sometimes you taste a little rupanuga, a little spontaneous desire for service, but most of the time, it's grunt work. It's the grunt work of performing the sadhana bhakti that is recommended by all the great acharyas. Isn't it? Getting up early, cleaning, serving the deity, performing the nine processes. This is not always, we don't always taste the nectar when we do this, but we know with our intelligence that this process will lead us to the very same destinations that our great acharyas have achieved. And that is the Krishna prema that for which every living entity is anxious to obtain. We don't have to review in this class how messed up the material world is. It's painfully obvious every day, I think, to each and every one of us. And as you get older, it becomes even more vivid because now you begin to not just experience the external pains of others, but you have your own, if you don't, there's a saying, if you don't wake up in the morning without pain, you're not alive. You know, that's how it gets when you get older. Back starts to hurt and you get different diseases, so many things happen. All of a sudden, now I remember why I chose to take this bhakti marg, because it's just a painful experience in this material world. It's all suffering. Just the other day, I was leaving Delhi. We're driving along the road, big highway, and there's a dead body just lying there. And it reminded me, this can be finished in a second. Fortunately, I remembered at the time that looking at a dead body at the beginning of a journey, when you're on a journey, is actually a very good auspicious sign. I said, why is it auspicious, a dead body? Seeing a dead body at the beginning of it, or any time during a journey. Even when I was at Mount Kailash, we were delayed one day. I went recently, I don't know if you know, but Indraduma Swami took a number of devotees to the Kora of Mount Kailash. Don't ask why, but that's another question. But we all went. I went mainly for Pratishta. I wanted the adventure. I wanted the feather in my cap. Yes, I did it. I went up, over 18,000 feet. But the other devotees were far more sincere than me. And I wanted association. I hadn't been with Maharaj for about 16 years. Last time we had gone to Muktanath together. So I wanted to take his association. Because time is moving very quickly, Never know. You see devotees, and I'm watching my godbrothers and godsisters, fall, like fallen angels. So I'm trying to get a little bit of what they have. So anyway, I on the second day, we were delayed one day because one devotee had to be flown out. He got very bad altitude sickness. So we had to get him out and get him down. That's the only solution, is to get someone down. So on the second day, I got a very bad stomach problem from bad water. So everybody started out, on the second day. It was the really hard trek on the second day. You had to go over the pass. And I couldn't. My legs were, they were like jelly. And I was always, I was proud of my physical ability at this age. I can do this stuff, you know. And I had prayed the night before to Lord Shiva, please, I want to give up some of my false ego, all of my false ego. So he arranged. I got sick and I couldn't walk. So I told everyone, I said, you go ahead. I'm going to go down and see if they have any horses left. At least take me up to the top. So I retreated down the mountain. I found one horse that was left. And I paid somebody. I said, take me up just, you know, a couple hours up so I can get up to the top. And on the way up, I saw they were bringing a dead body down. Oh, my God. I'm in trouble, you know. This altitude thing is not to be played with. Many people die, they get sick, they're deathly ill, they affect their hearts. It's not something that is a game, like I thought, going in. But later on I learned that seeing a dead body during a journey is actually, they have reached their destination. That's the import. So therefore, it's actually an auspicious, means you're going to reach your destination. So that is what happens when you see a dead body. So anyway, we did the Korah, and that's another story, and perhaps I can share that later. But I want to share with you this insight that Ravindra Prabhu has into our whole issue of how we obtain or don't obtain the status of finding ourselves in a Varnashram life. Because it's very difficult. I'm sure all of you have wrestled with this idea. How do I fit in? And especially we have some ashrams that don't fit in. For example, you know, the husband whose wife has perhaps passed away and now he's got to raise the children. Or the husband or the wife that the husband or wife has left and now they're still young but they're neither ready for vanaprast or sannyas, or they're no longer brahmachari because they have to work, because they have to do child support. We have many variations on what it is to fit into those, you know, kind of four specific categories. And a lot of the time, we just kind of put it in a box in our mind. We just say, okay, I'll understand that later. So I thought I'd read a little bit of this understanding that maybe will bring some light to that. In 1971, Prabhupada said to Kenneth Keating, who was the ambassador at that time to India, that his service was to America was turning hippies into happies. And he was, in his witticism, stating that he was taking people in the mode of ignorance and elevating them to the mode of goodness. And after his arrival in America, he wrote, though a person be even the most sinful man, he can at once be purified by systematic contact with a pure devotee, pure Vaishnava. A Vaishnava, therefore, can accept a bona fide disciple from any part of the world without any consideration of caste and creed and promote him by regulative principles to the status of a pure Vaishnava, who is transcendental to Brahminical culture. The system of caste or world without any consideration of caste and creed, and promote him by regulative principles, is available to everyone. So now, nor is it now possible to reestablish the institutional function in the present context of social, political, and economic revolution. Without any reference to the particular custom of a country, one can be accepted to the Vaishnava cult spiritually, and there's no hindrance in the transcendental process. And that's a purport from the Bhagavatam, 2nd canto, 4th chapter, 18th verse. So here, Prabhupada is expressing his doubts about the feasibility of a Varnashram system. And yet, even without it, he thought he could produce Vaishnavas who could perform the Brahminical function of spiritual guide to the people. He makes the same points emphatically in an early Bhagavad Gita lecture. He says, so at the present moment, there is no possibility of persons following the principles of Varnashram Dharma, either here or anywhere. Therefore, this is the panacea, to engage everyone in Krishna consciousness chanting Hare Krishna. He comes above the highest principle of Brahmanism. This is the greatest gift to humanity, that even if he's in the most degraded position, he can be raised to the highest position simply by chanting. I think sometimes we forget this in our quest to satisfy Prabhupada's wish that we create Varnashram. But this is the foundational understanding of what Prabhupada's mission came, but simply by the chanting. If I didn't believe that, I would have given up many, many years ago, and I'm sure that other devotees would be thinking the same way. If we did not believe, somehow or another, by Krishna's mercy, by Prabhupada's mercy, that the chanting of Hare Krishna was absolutely enough, it was everything, it surpassed all the need to even adhere to the Varnashram, we would be prostrated and we would leave. Anyway, so Prabhupada said, let me return to this, this is the only remedy. Now you cannot again introduce the system of Varnashram. One major reason, now it's clear that Prabhupada in 1974 had changed his mind about instituting Varnashram. And one major reason for his doing so, this is Rabindra speaking, is clearly disclosed in the 1977 conversation concerning a sannyasi who'd fallen down from his vows of celibacy. Prabhupada, just like our so-and-so, he was not fit for sannyas, but he was given sannyas. And five women he was attached and he disclosed. So therefore, Varnashram Dharma is required. Simply show bottle will not do. So the Varnashram Dharma should be introduced all over the world. 1977. So he's a little different. Satsvarup, introduced starting with the ISKCON community? Prabhupada, yes, yes. Brahmins, Kshatriyas, there must be regular education. Hari, sorry. But in our community, if we're training up as Vaishnavas, Prabhupada, yes. Hari, sorry, then how will we be able to make divisions in our society? And Prabhupada says, Vaishnava is not so easy. The Varnashram Dharma should be established to become a Vaishnava. It's not so easy to become a Vaishnava. Hari, sorry, no, it's not a cheap thing. Prabhupada, yes, therefore, this should be made. Vaishnav, to become Vaishnav is not easy. If Vaishnav, to become Vaishnav is so easy, why so many fall down? It's not easy. And later in that same conversation, Hari Sari said, well, when will we introduce the Varnashram system then? And Prabhupada said, well, in our society, amongst our members. And Hari Sari, but then if everybody's being raised to the Brahminical platform, Prabhupada, not everybody. Why are you misunderstanding? Varnashram, not everybody Brahman. Hari, sorry. No, but in our society, practically everyone is being raised to that platform. So then we might ask, what is Prabhupada? That is, everybody's being raised, but they're falling down. It had become, Ravindra. It had become clear to Prabhupada, after some years of experience in the West, that the elevation of his followers to the Brahminical platform of goodness, what to speak of the Vaishnava transcendental platform, was not going to happen universally or swiftly. His earliest hopes were unfulfilled. Since the time Prabhupada began speaking extensively about implementing Varnashram Dharma, there's been much discussion in ISKCON on the way to go about it. I can report that there is still little, if any, consensus In 1981, one leader convinced that after 10 years of rigorous thought, he had figured it out, published what he considered an authoritative 215-page book to persuade the intelligent leaders and thinkers of modern society to embrace the Varnashram Revolution. The Varnashram Manifesto for Social Sanity by Hari K. Swami is, I find, spectacularly unpersuasive, and I can best characterize it by borrowing from Alan Greenspan's phrase, irrational exuberance. This now famous expression was used. It aptly fit this manifesto. It should be noted that the work was so controversial within ISKCON that ISKCON's governing body commission passed a resolution in 1982 disowning the work, stating it represents the realization of the author and does not represent the official view or policies of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Why Rabindra brings this up? Because still today, we are contentious about how to establish the Varnashram. We have many different opinions within our society. It's not so easy to understand the mind of the pure devotee. So we are attempting to do that, but we have to be very patient. We may get many people who give various purports from this particular 7th canto, 12th chapter. Because it's very emphatic the way Prabhupada writes. It's extremely, in one sense, dogmatic. But you can see, even from within our own Prabhupada, that he's balancing and reconsidering how to do things. So then Rabindra goes on, and he says, I also have my own views on the application of Varnashram Dharma, for I too have thought about this subject, but I assure you, whatever I speak or write will not go uncontested by someone else in ISKCON. That's how contentious it is. Nevertheless, I will venture here to propose the major reasons why devotees are having such a difficult time coming to grips with the matter. And the first and foremost is, and this is, take this as take this for what it's worth. ISKCON has no brain. That's what he says. And what he goes on to say is that we don't have a Brahminical council. We haven't trained up Brahmins to actually advise society. There are different legs. At one point, Prabhupada gives in a description of a person who's become very advanced in the field of computers and IT. Even at that time, they were coming on. And Prabhupada said, this is just sudra work. No matter how smart they are with this technology, it is all sudra work. It's not Brahminical work. You know, I'm always impressed by people, you know, where they're so fast with this technology. They're very, very smart. Actually, Prabhupada is not so impressed. So here, Rabindra says, he quotes Prabhupada. He said, the GBC members will see that in every temple, these books are very thoroughly being read and discussed and understood and applied in practical life. That is wanted. How many books you've sold and how many books are in stock, that's secondary. Now suppose you go to sell some book and if someone says, you've read this book, can you explain this verse? And what will you say? You will say, no, it's for you. In the ILS this year, they did a survey. 600 leaders of ISKCON were in the ISKCON leadership seminars. And they gave a questionnaire. How many people have read the Srimad Bhagavatam completely? How many times? How many people have read this Chaitanya Charitamrita? How many times? Nectar Devotion? How many times? Bhagavad Gita? How many times? So they assembled the statistics. Okay, this is of 600 people who've come to learn how to be better leaders in ISKCON. And of those 600, I would say about 300 maybe actually filled out the questionnaire. So it was a sampling. It wasn't a perfect sampling, but it was a sampling. And of that, the number of people who read Bhagavad Gita one time all the way through was about 90%. About 90%. Now that's, you think, oh, 90%, that's pretty good. That's 90%. But what about the 10% of these leaders that didn't read the Bhagavad Gita all the way through? 10% of the leaders didn't read Bhagavad Gita all the way through. It's shocking. Well, then, Bhagavatam. How many people read first canto through the 12th canto all the way through, at least one time? Less than 50%. Less than 50% have read the Bhagavatam. These are people leading our society. How many people had read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, all three, you know, the Anchalita, Majalita, everything? How many have read it? 23%. That means, how many percent? 77% had not read Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's like such. I remember when I was at the Tiffany Press, in the press in New York, in Brooklyn, we would be printing out different small books, Transcendental Pastimes of Prahlad. As Prabhupada was translating, we would print it out. And we'd be sleeping because it was so cold in New York. Some person had to stay at the press, and you had to sleep at the press, but you would sleep on top of all the printed pages because it was still warm from the press, printing of the press. You'd sleep on, you couldn't wait to read it. You couldn't wait to the next chapter that Prabhupada was printing and that you could be shared, because he was explaining how the universe was created, everything. You couldn't get enough of it. And here and now we have all these books, and only 23% have read Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now you have to ask yourself, everybody listening online or listening in this room, how many times have I read Bhagavad Gita all the way through? How many times have I read Srimad Bhagavatam? Have I read the whole thing? Did I read it all the way through Canto 12? Did I read Chaitanya Charitamrita all the way through? How many times have I read it? Did I read the teachings of Lord Chaitanya all the way through? One of the greatest philosophical books ever made. Did I read Krishna book all the way through? Did I read the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu all the way through? How many times? I'm sure we can all say I'm deficient in this area. And yet, Varnashram is dependent, as Prabhupada and as Rabindra Sarupa pointed out, it's dependent on the brain of society, running a society. You cannot run a society by the legs, or worse. So our whole principle in understanding of this chapter, as I try to kind of prepare for this talk, was yes, we as a society have a long way to go, and not everybody is going to, you know, be fit into the Brahminical category, obviously. It's not meant to be that way. I certainly do not fit into that category. I know, because I haven't read all those books all the way through. Because I get stuck, or I get, you know, I'm more attracted to a certain service that I do. I need direction. I need the Shiksha Gurus of my God brothers and my God nephews, who are now shown to way more advanced than ever. There's so many Brahminical people now. And now we've got this college going. We've got some, the Gurukul in Mayapur, trying to create Brahmins. Brahmanas who can guide the society. It's my view, anybody who's in the GBC now, who's not Brahminical, they should step down. Let the Brahmin, or at least form a council of Brahmins that can advise them. They're like the Rajas. They're like the kings. They're the managers. But we need Brahmins. We need a brain. Desperately need a brain to guide us. So this is, for me, the purport of this 7th canto, 12th chapter. And thank God there are those devotees in positions of management that see the need for this. And they're doing what they can to create brains, Brahmins, heads for our society. Because I am worse, like Prabhupada said, I'm a hippie. I'm simply a hippie. And by his mercy, I've become a happy. But that doesn't make me a Brahmin. doesn't make me so intelligent. And in your little world that you live in of your friends and your associates, find those Brahmins and associate with those heads. Get real knowledge from them. They can guide us very nicely. I know that there are many very erudite Brahminical devotees here in Juhu. And we can really practice Varnashram in our own small way by understanding our own nature and then submitting to somebody who's actually a Brahminical person, or becoming a Brahminical person ourselves. And there's a lot more that I could read of this talk, of this paper written in 1981 or 1982. When was this written? This paper that Rabindra wrote was, I think it was 1982 he wrote this. But Prabhupada had much to say on this subject and try to see the entire picture as you read through this chapter, and don't get myopic. Don't become just, you know, I see this one thing, Prabhupada said this one thing. No, even Prabhupada had some arc of the way he wanted Varnashram to be instituted over the course of the years that he had experience managing his ISKCON and the devotees in ISKCON. And it was all how he saw Krishna arranging things. Okay. That's the ability of a pure Vaishnav, to make adjustments like that. And he left us with a strong emphasis on creating a Brahminical society which will eventually naturally develop into a Varna and Ashram society. But we can't artificially impose it, and we can't hold people to standards that they'll never, ever be able to achieve, because we'll set them up for failure in that way. We have to understand how Prabhupada was adjusting, and we have to also be in that mood. So, this is my offering today to you to please, when you're reading through this, of course, we're taking everything the Prabhupada says is the absolute truth, but at the same time, we have to see it in the context of how he instituted things and how he dealt with things. And it's always a very delicate balance. And we have to learn how to balance those things ourselves. And that is the purport for seeing that Krishna is present impersonally everywhere, but he is also personally present in our hearts as the super soul. So it's not that we are not without a voice. It's not that Krishna's impersonal energy is just Om. No, Krishna is present as the super soul, and he's given us so many wonderful associates and pure devotees to carry on our mission. Let us take this and apply it very, very intelligently and read our spiritual master's books. Do not become the statistic that I heard at the ILS meetings, that so many people have not. Take your time to do your bhajan. And that means reading and discussing. And it's your own bhajan. It's not somebody else's bhajan. Well, this is my request. And I want to thank everyone, specifically my dear friend Brajahari Prabhu, who's encouraged me always in my service, even though it's less than a sudra service, but still he's encouraged me. And all the devotees here who have encouraged me. And I'm embarking now on I start my 70th year. This is when Prabhupada did his best work, so I'm asking, please bless me so I can do my most vigorous preaching in the next phase of my life, just like Prabhupada did at the tail end of his life. Because what else? There's nothing else to do. There's nothing in the world, there's nothing to do in this world except fulfill the order of the spiritual master. And when we went to do the Korah, it forced me to read the fourth canto and the prayers of the Prachetas. And it forced me to understand that that's what Lord Shiva's doing. He's fixed on the instructions of his spiritual master. That's what he's fixed on doing. And therefore we prayed to him as the greatest Vaishnava. We prayed, please help us become more renounced and fixated on our spiritual master's orders. Then our lives will be joyful and perfect. And again, there's no substitute. If you can do nothing, if you're blind and there's no braille, simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, all knowledge is revealed. So that's always we're supposed to read, but that's always the foundation. This is our oxygen. We have to have oxygen up there as in case we were, because you're dying one red corpuscle at a time. You're dying when you're not used to that altitude. So this is, without this, we're dying. And this is life. These japa beads, they're life. So choose life. As they say in the Jewish tradition, choose life. Choose that japa and make that japa really count, and give yourself time to read and understand this Varnashram system and how it's going to be gradually introduced as we get purified and develop our brahminical class. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate all of your support. Hare Krishna. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. So are there any questions? Great. Thank you very much, Haribol. Grantara Shima Bhagavatam ki Jai.